Blog Talk Radio.
You're a grown-up. You don't need a script. Let's just get to know each other. Tell me about yourself.
Okay. What do you want to know? I'm rich, very rich, but a do-gooder. I help poor people, orphans, whales, you know.
Look, if you're not going to tell me about yourself, let me take a shot. You're an insecure little weirdo who lies about everything and probably cries himself to sleep every night.
Wow, you're good. Well, I guess that date's over.
Hey, get back here. Relax. It's not over.
But you said all those horrible, true things about me.
You're like an abandoned building that ought to be condemned. You know, busted windows, rats running around, a real nasty sewage situation. But maybe if the right person got a hold of it and cleaned it up, maybe they could take that disgusting building and turn it into something not so disgusting.
Are you that person?
Lucky for you, I like a project.
And am I that disgusting building?
Yeah.
That is the nicest thing that anyone has ever said about me.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane!
No, it's Max, Darryl, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good evening, folks. This is the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio. Folks, the comic shop is coming up in a few moments. We got to go to a quick groove. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Boy, are we dealing with sweltering heat. The Big Apple is a baked apple, folks. It's around 90 degrees plus. We're in the heart of the summer. And again, we want to talk to you about comic book, fantasy, sci-fi stuff. So there it is. This is the comic shop, folks. Let's go to a quick nerdcore groove. This is from the classic punk group, the Ramones, channeling the Spider-Man theme. We'll be back in a few moments. And again, let's groove. Folks, enough of that. Once again, that was the classic legendary punk group, the Ramones, the Spider-Man theme. All right, folks. Again, let's get into it. The podcast Avengers, your podcast Avengers, have arrived. First up, Captain Kirk. Captain, let's get to it.
Howdy, y'all.
And of course, we have the your wall crawler, your personal wall crawler, I think. I'm going to try to use every adjective that's connected to comic books to describe this gentleman. Again, this is the indefatigable Daryl B.
Stepping outside of mode for a moment, all the best to the people in San Francisco. That perfect down to the day. We'll try for the next hour to make you guys forget about that.
Did we give our condolences to the late great Jim Kelly? I think you mentioned him last week as well, right, Daryl?
Yeah, it was funny. I mentioned the folks know my sports obsession. I'm a late night caller with New York's WFAN on the overnight, and I found out through there that Jim Kelly died, and I told them, shouting out the show, that we just did a show with a segment on The Last Dragon and how it happened. And, you know, life is funny, man. That's why folks appreciate what you got, because you never know. You never know. Jim Kelly was a strong, strong man, and he and the fates took him from us, you know. So anything could happen. Appreciate it, folks.
Yeah, you know, one could probably say that Jim Brown's probably a closer black imprint to Steve McQueen. But I would still put Fred Williamson, either one of these guys could really be that black analog for Steve McQueen. Jim Kelly, Fred Williamson, or Jim Brown. So, you know, for what he represented in the early 70s to the, I guess, early to mid 70s, as far as black action cinema, really incredible martial artist. 67 years old, man, still young in this day and age to be. I don't think they've really given us all the information as to how he transpired. I mean, how he expired. But, you know, we really have to cherish these people while they are with us. You know, I've put out some feelers for Pam Grier. We've got to get her on the show. And actually, I met Time Mock, since you mentioned The Last Dragon. I met him personally a few weeks ago at a recent Long Island comic convention, Eternal Con, the first annual Eternal Con in Westbury, Long Island. And I met Time Mock personally. And he does the whole Afro Nerd thing. So I just have to put out the feelers, but he's willing to do the show. So we're going to have to get Time Mac on the show. Just because it's Afro Nerd Radio, to be honest with you.
And
all right,
no bigger tribute to Jim Kelly than just check out the Boondocks Bushido Brown. You know, no bigger tribute to him, and that's a meme that's been floating around the internet since he's passed. So, you know, rest in peace, Mr. Kelly. Thank you.
Well, you know, and what's also unfortunate, Daryl, is that, and I know the captain is very, he knows this intimately. You know, black folk have their own pop culture. I don't think we tap into it enough. We try to do that here on Afro Nerd at the comic shop, but we have our own pop culture. These were our own superheroes before we got to the Black Panthers and now Falcon and all these people, hopefully, that will make it to the silver screen. We had Jim Brown. We had Richard Roundtree. We had all these people, and we may have to do a blaxploitation show sooner or later. A more thorough black exploitation show because it is very much in the black pop culture tradition. So we need to give more shout out to them and not when folks die. So hopefully we'll get Pam Grier on sooner or later or even Time Off. All right. First up, let's get into something that we failed to cover last week, gentlemen. I want to talk about briefly Michael Rosenbaum from Smallville. He's actively campaigning to reprise his role as Lex Luthor for the Man of Steel sequel. Now, I thought he was sick of shaving his head and just kind of sick of the Lex Luthor typecasting or what have you. But I think actors know full and well that there's a distinct difference between what happens in film as opposed to television. Film is the big time. So I suspect... And this would be a different Lex Luthor, I would think. This would be a different one. What are your thoughts on that, Daryl? Do you think it would be a good look or just what? I mean, we saw in Man of Steel that they did shot out Smallville. They did have some actors that were involved in Smallville in Man of Steel. So that might, you know, it's not like it can't happen. What are your thoughts?
I would love it just because he was the best thing about Smallville in my eyes. Michael Rosenbaum. He's the best thing about Smallville in my eyes. He's got to be included somewhere, and if it's as Lex, you know, I would have no problem with that. The second thing I would truly love about it is that Warner Brothers is actually, if they do make the move, if they do this, all right, they actually are rewarding an actor that's been with them for years upon years upon years. Michael Rosenbaum is a DC Comics addict. He's been in Justice League. He's been in Justice League Unlimited. He's been in Superman. He's been, you know, doing as voiceover, the DC Universe movies. That would be a nod to the fan base that it seems DC and Warner Brothers want to alienate, and with some of their decisions, you know, seemingly. Seemingly, it would be a great shout out. It would be a great, you know, it would be a great callback, all right? And I think fans would be smart enough to disassociate more of some of the weaker elements of Smallville from the movie with doing this, in my opinion. And you know, him as Lex, can we say there's been a better Lex Luthor on screen outside of Gene Hackman than Michael Rosenbaum? Back to you.
Well, I see our friend Q-Storm. He's already in the chat room saying, I would hate seeing the Smallville Lex as the Man of Steel Lex. So we already have a little bit of hateration. You know what? Let's go to the casting. Captain, what are your thoughts about Michael Rosenbaum, who is my homeboy, I have to confess. I was born in Oceanside, Long Island, and he is an Oceanside, Long Island native. So I may be partial to him being a Long Islander like myself. But what are your thoughts, Captain, on him actively pursuing this role?
All right. I'll be terse here. First, I never liked the Smallville series. I never liked that whole thing in the first place. But I did like his role in it. You know, I agree with Daryl as far as that's concerned pertaining to him. This is going to come down to availability when it comes to dealing with these studio houses. What big-name actor can they get and who they can't get? Then they work backwards from there because a lot of times their first choice is booked up already, and then they have a list, and then they work backwards. I do not think he is really the first choice, and he will not be the first choice. That's just my opinion. So, you know, if they can get a hold of a bigger actor, that will happen. When I say bigger actor, not from the TV standpoint, from the film standpoint, theatrical release. That's what I think will happen. But I believe that he's on the list. Now, that being said, I don't have any problem with him playing it based on what I saw there. From the TV standpoint, he definitely could play it at the theatrical level. We know it's all about the villain, and I think he definitely does have the chops to play at the theatrical level the way they're doing Superman at this given time. That's all. Back over to you, Seraph, on that.
Yeah, you know, the only thing about this, a couple of things, and Daryl hinted at this, when you're dealing with Hollywood, and we talk about the suits all the time, the suits have a real stagnant, regressive way at looking at actors. They like to box them in. And I suspect that they think that Smallville has a certain level of stink attached to it, and they may not want to have or give him the opportunity to play Lex on the at a higher level on the big screen. Because this would be a different Lex Luthor. It would really be a different role for him. I mean, I use the term reprise the role, but I don't know if that's exactly what it would be, really. I think this Lex would be a different Lex. And, you know, they're tossing names around. I'm hearing Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad, who initially What was the first, well, the most notable series he was in, Daryl? The one with
Malcolm in the Middle?
Yeah, Malcolm in the Middle. Thanks, Malcolm in the Middle with Frankie Munoz. Looking at him in that role, it was an excellent role. It takes a certain level of acting chops to even do that, but it was TV comedy, and I think people are very dismissive of that. Who would have known, based on what he was doing on TV, as to who would have known he had the chops to do his role, the role that he's now garnering attention for in Breaking Bad? His Breaking Bad role on TV, mind you. But see, again, we're talking about cable. Now it looks like he's a front runner for that role. Now, the only problem is, well, I mean, that shouldn't be a problem. If you look at it from that perspective, then why not give Michael Rosenbaum the shot? Because Michael Rosenbaum did goofy television, just like Cranston did. So we don't know what Rosenbaum is capable of on the big screen. We just don't, not really. So it would be interesting to give him a shot, but I know how these Hollywood guys think, and it's like, well, he would be cheaper. But at the same time, they're going to feel like, Smallville is TV. They're going to box him in, which is really an unfair thing. And at the same time, they're throwing names around like Leonardo DiCaprio. Now, DiCaprio did. Now, listen.
Sorry.
First of all, DiCaprio, his price tag is too high, I suspect. Maybe. Marvel doesn't shy away from talent like that. You know, and when I'm thinking about Thor has Hopkins in it. Sir Anthony Hopkins, Rene Russo, Idris Elba. They're not afraid to get top-flight talent for Marvel properties. DC, Warner Brothers, Daryl knows the deal. These people, they embrace making mistakes at this point. That's their thing. We saw the antebellum version of Lex Luthor in Django Unchained. Let me repeat that. We saw the antebellum version of of Lex Luthor in Django Unchained. He could do it, and he'll probably put butts in the seats. So I would think he would be an impressive Lex Luthor. They're mentioning Benedict Cumberbatch, but he's going to be typecast now. Khan, now we're going to Lex Luthor. I'm not sure about that. A lot of names are being tossed around now. The gentleman from what's his name? I'm looking at him right now. He's also another one from cable television that's doing some phenomenal work. I can't think of his name. But there's quite a few folks that are coming out. Not Dexter. Damian Lewis from Homeland. He's got the acting chops. I'm not going to lie. He's got the acting chops. They're even bringing out Jason Statham. He doesn't have to shave his head. And he looks good in the suit. I don't know if he can pull off the Machiavellian kind of thing, but maybe he could. I don't know. But I think so far Cranston seems to be the guy that they're mentioning for this thing. And then Daniel Day-Lewis is another one. Daniel Day-Lewis does bad very well. He does bad very well. But I'm on Candyland. Candyland, Antebellum LexCorp. I'm just putting it out there. Your thoughts, Darryl? You had some griping. What's
no,
wrong with Leo? What's Leo's the man?
I need a megalomaniacal guy who could keep his calm, who could stay rational, but yet be totally insane as the role of Lex Luthor. You know who would be perfect for it? But he's already typecast into another character, Zachary Quinto. He would be a perfect Lex Luthor. The problem is, he's Spock. You need someone to radiate crazy, but at the same time be intellectually superior, but at the same time be totally insecure when they see the red and yellow S. Oh, well, it's not red and yellow anymore, but the red S against the blue. You need someone to do that.
Well, he's another example. He goes back to the Michael Rosenbaum question. The fact that this guy was on a goofy series called Heroes. Now all of a sudden he gets his shot. You don't think of him in that respect anymore. You got to give the guy the shot. So maybe Rosenbaum could. Well, I can't say maybe. He's played Lex Luthor already, but for the big screen, he's going to have to really bring it. is going to have to tone down the camp. No camp in this. He's got to be a bastard, a maniacal, thinking bastard. You know, and I. But see, when you talked about being smooth, see the Calvin Candy character, Lex Luthor has had flashes of anger. He has to be a sociopath. He has to be. He's in business. He's in business. Most business people are sociopaths. So, well, I shouldn't put it that way. But let's say the stereotype of big business has a lot to do with the perception of being a psychopath or sociopath. So, I'm putting it out there. We'll see how it works out. But if they're going to bring him on Man of Steel, no. He could – nah. That goes back to the suits.
American Psycho.
The suits aren't going to do that.
I just had to get one DC dig. I've been kind too long. I got to play to type.
Okay, now Q-Storm saying Michael Chiklis. Come on. But
well, you know him in the Shield, you know. I Q-Storm, Chiklis could work, but the thing is, you know, Chiklis is a Marvel guy, and I expect an announcement to be made any day now that Chiklis is going to be involved in another Marvel project coming up soon.
Wait. I'm confused with Q-Storm here. He says no to DiCaprio. DiCaprio played Howard Hughes. I mean, come on, he was in the Gangs of New York. Why am I losing my memory?
The talented Mr. Ripley. If he was going to be Luthor, the way he acted in The Talented Mr. Ripley is the closest character that he's portrayed, even more than Django. The Talented Mr. Ripley, that's the closest character he's gotten to Luthor.
Well, you know, our friend Kim threw out a wild card, Jeffrey Wright. Now, listen.
Ooh.
She's got a point there, but cross racial casting, not so sure they're going to. We're lucky to get a Perry Black for Perry White. Lawrence Fishburne.
We hated that one.
And actually, Lawrence Fishburne, if he trimmed down a little bit, Lawrence Fishburne would have been a badass Lex Luthor too. I mean, this is what's messed up about some of these roles, you know, from characters that are 70 or 80 years old. That in the modern era, if Superman just came out last year, you would hope there would be greater consideration for multiracial casting. But they're still working on a 1938 premise. You're lucky to get stuff here and there. Here and there. To have a black Lex Luthor, and the imprint of Lex Luthor, his look is so imprinted. But Jeffrey Wright could pull it off, man.
Yeah, Cadillac Records. Cadillac Records. The schizophrenic release he did in that's reminiscent of it.
Basquiat, the artist that died from AIDS. I mean, and also think about what he did in Shaft. I think I have a clip of that. Peoples, incredible.
Black people would flip if they made Luthor black. First thing, black people
White folks would flip.
Also, white people too. On both sides, it's flipping. And black people talk. Why they have to make the bad guy black? And then the white people would turn around. You know what the white people would turn around and do? Come on.
Let's trade it off. If he's going to be black, make Supergirl a sister.
I'm not doing that.
You could send your hate mail right now to OrionBed666 at hotmail.com. I will answer you back.
Right. we can't even get black characters to come on the Silver Screen. Black combo characters who are black. You know, if you truly wanted to bring Man of Steel into the modern era, people are like, well, you know, they said, well, you know, maybe I'm going back on my word. I've said I'm very much about keeping things close to the vest. You know why this doesn't bother me? Because we've seen multiple iterations of Lex Luthor. First time out, stick to canon. This is a, there's been so many versions of Lex Luthor. You know what? Might be time. That is my point. We've already seen all these versions of Lex Luthor. Maybe we might want to go for a Jeffrey Wright. It's a good one, Ken. We might want to go there. Listen, we got a call. Let's open up the line. Sorry, let's open the line, and then we're going to go to another topic briefly. All right, again, the Grindhouse, the comic shop. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, 484. What's up?
Hey, guys, it's Q Storm.
Q, what's up, man?
How you doing? Hey, real quick, thanks for the looking out on the Black Panther Christopher Priest run. I want to try to snap that up. But
please do.
I guess I'm going back to your proposal of Leonardo DiCaprio for Luthor. I mean,
right.
Leonardo DiCaprio is an actor who I will go see his films just based on the fact that he's in them. He's one of those guys.
Right.
But the one thing about him that just I have a hard time with, and he pulled it off in Django, I got to give it to you, but he just looks too young. He doesn't have the –
I don't think so.
He doesn't say to me.
He's 40 now.
I don't care how old he is. It's like Ralph Macchio. He will always look eternally young. And you mentioned The Aviator. He was brilliant in that. I cannot deny that. However, to me, I have to look at that as though I'm not really watching a Howard Hughes movie. I'm just watching a movie about someone who's in aviation. I did not buy him as Howard Hughes, but what I did buy was his brilliant acting ability. I just think you need someone who has a little bit of weather to him. He needs a little bit of weight and a little bit of age to him to pull off playing a multi-billionaire who has all of Metropolis in his back pocket. And I don't get that from
the guy played J. Edgar Hoover. So it's not you're right. You know, listen, he definitely
that movie got horribly reviewed.
Well, listen, as far as him aging, I think it's less about his characterization, more about what other things going on with that movie. But I'll say this much. I think that he has matured definitely more so than when he was in Titanic, which was going on like 20 years now. But with Lex Luthor, I think if you're going to modernize Lex Luthor, maybe he shouldn't be so much the older corporate baron. Maybe he should be kind of a younger guy that's a little bit visually, a little bit more of a peer to Superman as far as visually. I'm just looking at it that way because Michael Rosenbaum's going to look young too.
Right,
I
don't want him anywhere near that role.
Do you think he might be prejudicial considering what I said about Cranston? Cranston was the goofy guy in Malcolm in the Middle. Now we're looking at him as this serious meth dealer. We don't know until these guys are given an opportunity.
Listen, you're absolutely right. Any one of these guys has the chops to do it. If I'm the casting director, I got to go by who can pull off the acting and also physically fits the role as well. And Bryan Cranston, another brilliant actor. I just don't see him. The only bad role I've seen him in outside of Breaking Bad is in the Total Recall film, which is the only film I've seen him where it shows me that he could play badass. But from physical presence, does the camera wrap around him as Lex Luthor? I don't see it. I do see it maybe with Daniel Day-Lewis because he just has that imposing – he's got that imposing figure, but these other guys, I just don't see it.
Okay, so Q, let me just say it like this. You are a fan of the John Byrne type Lex Luthor.
You know what? You're reading my mind. Yeah, exactly.
A little bit more heftier, but he always had an air of menace, even though he had charm. He had that air of menace, but he could lose his mind in a second if you bring up Superman.
Exactly.
That sort of type of thing. Okay, I get where he's coming from now. I know where the bias is right there. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but just like how Afrinur just said, you got an image of the character in your head, and you want that on the screen. He's a John Byrne dude. You know, I'm more of a Dan Jurgens, the younger type Luthor that stands next with Superman. But I could see where you're coming from, man. I can see where you're coming from.
I think they're going to go younger because there's so much about the turnaround on this Man of Steel. I mean, I just saw Mark Waid discuss his issues of Man of Steel in the comic book movie website, comicbookmovie.com, for our listening audience. And he, you know, he's fighting with, just like you, just like myself, we're fighting with with the canon of Superman and where the studio is trying to go. And all the younger folk, Generation Y, they look at this like we looked at the Christopher Reeve version of Superman. I mean, it's a different era. And I suspect they're going to go for a younger guy that's maniacal, that looks physically similar and also dissimilar to of Henry Cavill. I just think they're going to go for a peer thing as opposed to some old guy that's, you know, running things. I don't know. I think we've seen that so many times. We've seen that.
Can I say one last thing? Just 1 minute, sure. and I'll relinquish the floor. See, when I think of Lex Luthor, putting aside my John Byrne bias, and, you know, Daryl, you hit it right on the head. I mean, when you just think about what they could do with this character of Lex Luthor in the 21st century, Lex Luthor represents all the things that the housing market decline was about. He represents all the things that Occupy Wall Street was fighting against. He represents corporate greed, Wall Street greed, while Main Street is still suffering. And when you think of that character, I don't think you think of a young person. The young person is just the investment broker lackey who's sitting at the day trader desk, you know. But when you think of Lex Luthor, he is that old moneyed guy who is pulling all the strings from behind. I don't see him as a young guy. He's that guy that the archetypal white character who is probably in his 40s, 50s, who is just running shop over this country. I think that's what you think of.
Yeah, but you know, Wall Street also has their fair share of greedy young investment bankers, stock traders, corporate raiders. I mean, it's Wall Street has it all. There's that image also. These young guys that are like early 40s that are also hedge fund managers. Those guys also comprise Wall Street too. I mean, it's two ways of looking at it, Q. I'm telling you how Hollywood is on this youth thing. They've been on it, and they've been brilliant. I could be wrong, but I just have a feeling.
Ironically, Leonardo DiCaprio is going to be playing a young trader in his next Martin Scorsese film, Wolf of Wall Street. So you're probably right. It wouldn't be my choice, though.
Here it is. Warner Brothers finally sticks it to Marvel. In the role of Lex Luthor, they drive a truckload of money up to Robert Downey Jr.'s house. And
that would be excellent.
Is he contracted for Marvel?
That was just fantasy casted. But if Warner Brothers ever did something like that, then you know what? Hey, Captain, you would hear it from me first. I would never hate on DC again, because that's the type of ballsy move they need in terms of their movies. Wait, what did he tell you? He's Lex Luthor and he's going against Superman? I think that would make like $1 billion in the first weekend. Everybody would want to see it.
Let me go to the next topic. Let me go to a quick groove, Nerdcore groove. And when we get back, more discussion, folks, more discourse. This is Chemical Calisthenics, Black Delicious. Well, I should say Black Delicious performing Chemical Calisthenics. We'll be right back.
Good. Can you say it fast? Here we go.
Neutron, proton, mass defect. Lyrical oxidation, your irrelevant mass spectrograph, your electron volt, atomic energy erupting as I get all open on betatron, gamma ray, thermal cracking, cyclotron, any and every mic you're on, transuranium, if you're always uranium, molecule spontaneous combustion. Law of death, net proportion, can't eat weight, I'm every element around. Lead, gold, tin, iron, platinum, zinc, when I wrap your thing, iodine, nitrate, activate. Red uranium, the only difference is I transmit sound. Talents with some talents, then you add a little talent in. Careful with those ingredients, they can explode and blow up if you drop them and they hit the ground. Let it flow, yo, just let it go, get back. The 808. H2 lime water, solution of calcium hydroxide, slotted in CaO lime, will make bleach powder, galvanic metal beats thump out louder, dry ice, CO square refrigerant, NO2 makes you laugh, it's laughing gas, you buy it, I'm muriatic acid glue, I'm like oil over toil, the king of chemicals, energy, heat, gas, waste, all your mass, chemical change, ice point, melt all your wraps, atomic wave, rope shocks when you call, we land, fillable gas, keep going, we're beyond, beyond, I'm only up with buzz and fill the ambiance, the diabetic process, ought to calm your ass, after I warm your ass, I give you sodium silicate, NO2, S103, a water glass, borax flux, you're full of brimstone, sulfur, boracic acid, hip-hop preserver, CO2 could never put away the fire, style aromas, it's scientific, the lyrical views would be connected to teach you chemical calisthenics. That all matter is composed of at least three fundamental particles, protons, electrons, neutrons. Proton is charged positive, by now you guessed, electrons are probably negatively charged, neutrons don't follow either, neutral in the middle, only no apologies, centered, unmoved by yin and yang ideologies, neutron bombs, sons, electron theory, cosmic physical radioactivity, different points and joints within infinity, oxygen and hydrogen, alive within all types of energy, 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 inside a world, inside a world, inside a universe. The verse inside of me existing, although I can't see it. Carbon, nitrogen, cycle, ionization, heavier than electromotive metals that weigh over a ton. This has been a chemist, black delicious creation. Clean out your desk, put your papers away, cause class is almost done.
All aboard for the night train.
This is chemistry plus calisthenics. I'm calcium. Potassium, magnesium, newspaper of sodium, sulfate, your solvent, chloroform, remedy from the norm, glycerin, purest form, titanium, brain is flowing away out when the juice is out of water, vibration forming underneath the sun, reaching the deep, the leaders, the equal, the beast, the media, eager to be here, and leaving the sea, I know what I'm going, I'm thinking, I'm made, I'm screaming, I'm going, I think I'm known, I'm cooking a potion.
Yeah!
Go!
Real hip hop, folks, get it while it lasts. Again, Nerdcore Groove, that is Chemical Calisthenics by Blackalicious. Folks, this is The Comic Shop. Welcome to the Grindhouse edition of The Comic Shop, our double deal shows. The call in number, once again, 646-915-9620. 646-915-9620. We were initially talking about the casting of Lex Luthor, and we stayed on that for quite a bit. Let's try to tighten it up a little bit. While we have about 20 minutes or so remaining. So let's shift gears a little bit, gentlemen. I want to talk about, what did I have listed here? Lone Ranger. Daryl, you saw this thing. Try to keep it tight. Briefly, what are your thoughts? They're talking about less than a $50 million takedown for 5 days. It's not a good look. It's not Man of Steel money. Certainly not Iron Man money. And it's not going to be Despicable Me 2 money, incidentally. So what's going on here? What are your thoughts?
My problem with this is the same as my problem with World War Z. Is the same with my problem with Man of Steel. It's the same. Why do you feel the need to divert from the source material so much? Do you really think today's audiences are that stupid? Amazing Spider-Man. Do you think audiences can't grasp the real story, though, or the story that's been told for generations, Man of Steel? Do you really think that we need to turn Tonto into a wisecracking sidekick? I'm watching the movie, and through the first hour, thinking what's passing through my mind is, you know, it's a good thing that Johnny Depp is part Native American, because he would be hearing criticism on the level of what we heard with Last Airbender. Watching this, okay? Hey, the action scenes are great. This is why you spent all that money, right? All of these action scenes, that's great, but. As Captain says all the time, the one thing that we have been trained to look for is plot. The one thing we've been trained to look for is passion. And you look at this movie, and it feels wooden. It feels carbon copy. It feels like we have seen this movie
over and over and over again. And the way to heal from that is bigger explosions, doing a whole bunch of violence. Now, I was in a theater. There are a lot of little kids in this theater watching this movie. And I'm looking at the parents, and I'm like, just from the trailers, you're bringing little kids to this movie? You know, I gave it a 5 out of 10. And that's me being generous. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Captain, you want to weigh in on this? We spoke about this in depth behind the scenes right before we went on air. So I'll try to recreate magic with our discussion on this thing. But what are your thoughts on this?
Well, based on the trailers that I've seen going into this movie, one, I did not see the movie. And I didn't see the movie because, to me, it seems like a very good Netflix movie, a good DVD movie. And that's what I thought going in. Everything that I saw, I said, this is not worth the movie experience that we trial up here on this show. No. This looks like a great DVD, great Netflix, and I'll wait for that. And that's how I felt about it. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Apple Nerd.
Yeah, you know, it just didn't grab me. Like, I thought that, well, first of all, you can't disrespect Johnny Depp's acting prowess. And you can't disrespect initially anyway, I should say. And this is what happens to a lot of actors. We see that Robert De Niro is going through this now. But at least he's going through it a little bit older than Johnny Depp. They go in for the cash cow. They do all these smaller independent films. They get all the critical acclaim, but there's no real big time yacht money in that. There's no yacht and airplane money involved with smaller films, but you do get the critical acclaim. I think it's really pretty clear now that Johnny Depp is doing these big movies where before, in the early 90s, he was very much about these smaller films. Edward Scissorhands, Gilbert Grape. And he was nobody. I mean, people were looking at him like, well, you know, you could do these bigger films, and he was fighting that. You see Brad Pitt in World War Z, and that's kind of sort of – it's a little strange for him somewhat. Now, he's done bigger films, but not really the blockbuster per se. He's done somewhat – he's kind of done the same thing that Johnny Depp has done because these guys want to fashion themselves as real actors. So now that you see him in this – Lone Ranger film, to me, it just seems like Pirates of the Caribbean in the West. It gives off that stink. And the problem also is, listen, when I was younger, I really did not care for Westerns that much. I just did not get them. In later years, as I model myself more of a cineast, not in the same universe as Sergio Mims, but I do know my fair share about films, and there really are very good Westerns that have a lot of meat to them, a lot of gristle. So even the spaghetti Westerns from the 60s, you have to look at them differently. And the modern Western now, the ones that have been done recently that have garnered attention, critical acclaim, and money, they're treated more seriously. I mean, their approach is like is very serious. Whether it's the remake of True Grit, you could think of course, Unforgiven. Yeah, that's maybe 20 years ago, but I would think that would be under the modern umbrella. 3:10 to Yuma, which was another remake. You know, these movies are—they're very—they're smaller, and I think maybe a film like this, if you're going to do it, maybe it shouldn't have been such a over-the-top, big-budget kind of thing. Because even if you classify Django it made money, but it was still kind of a real actor's film. Now you have, all I can see is this is Disney going for greed. Let's try to do a royal flush. You know, we had all this money. We can't stop making these Pirates of the Caribbean films. Why not apply the same tools from Pirates of the Caribbean to the Lone Ranger? I mean, initially, First of all, didn't Lone Ranger have problems to begin with? Wasn't it talk about it?
Yeah.
Wasn't it talk about the characters fighting zombies?
Well, hey,
what's going on?
I'll just take it like this now. Anytime I hear that, the production team wants more money, I'm going to use that as code as, we know our script sucks, but here, we put in 10 more explosions or 15 more shots of physically impossible things to do with bullets. When you guys see the scene where he's riding a horse on top of a train, and you see it on the commercials, if you see the full scene, you'll be like, I guess this guy decided if I merge Sucker Punch with Pirates, I'll get something. You want to know a pulp film to go back and take a look at that this should have been? Go back and take a look at the Alec Baldwin Shadow film. That's what this should have been. That's what this should have been. But for more money, I want brain cells.
Something else that Q-Storm is pointing out in the chat room. He's saying the shadow tanked that was Alec Baldwin. Although I liked it visually, I thought for the 90s, it had a good look to it. But the shadow tanked, the spirit tanked, the phantom tanked. What makes them think the Lone Ranger would work? And you know, I think I might have mentioned behind the scenes, Captain. You know, the shadow, the spirit, those are essentially pulp heroes, and pulp heroes are, for all intents and purposes, precursors to the superhero. And even the superhero now has to be taken seriously. You can't do a campy superhero film in the modern era. Hell, Superman can't even be done campy anymore. Superman cannot be done campy. He's killing people now in a darker uniform, darker guy. Yeah, and you can't have these. Even the pulp heroes are essentially superheroes, and they have to be taken seriously. If they went a different direction with Lone Ranger, almost like Batman, because Batman, Lone Ranger, isn't Lone Ranger, even if you go into the mythology of the Lone Ranger is supposed to be a relative, a ancestor to the Green Hornet. And they messed up the Green Hornet. Even though I didn't dislike the movie, folks were looking for a harder-edged movie instead of a comedy. So I don't know why they keep on repeating these tropes over and over again. When if you have to make Superman darker, there you go. If you have to make Superman darker and remove his bikini shorts, if you have to do that, the goofy yellow shorts, then you know good and well you can't have Lone Ranger being some goofy vehicle. There you go. Any thoughts on that, Daryl? Any closing remarks, or it is what it is?
Well, I'll just say this. A lot of the problems, we're going to bring up Shazam later. A lot of problems that I have with this, I also have with that coming up. And just a foreshadowing of that. I'm of the opinion, why do you have to make the heroes darker? Because then if everybody's dark, then everything is homogeneous. There's nothing. Everything's monotone. This was supposed to be a little bit lighter, and they went totally goofy with it. And that's my major problem with this. They had the underpinnings to make a good movie here. Instead, I got Wild West 2 Thunderdrome.
Oh, Jesus. Well, let's since you brought this up, let's move things along just a little bit. Actually, you know what? I was going to talk about Shazam. Let's get that in a moment, briefly. We've got about 10 minutes remaining. There was an article in Comic Book Resources, and I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but they were talking about the notion of comic book collecting and relationships. And I have to think that, I don't think I've actually disclosed my comic book collecting to any girlfriends. Not initially. I don't think I did that consciously. I have to think about it. But for some reason, it never came up. Now I would be conscious as not to mention it. But I do remember not really, going there for some reason. I didn't emphasize it. But the way things are nowadays, I definitely wouldn't mention it. So what is that? I mean, they seem to hint at, you know, folks are talking about guys that were married, that they kind of, you know, it's tolerated by their family members, it's tolerated by their wives. These spouses look at it as being very juvenile. I remember looking at a forum one time a few years ago. I think it was the BlackSuperhero.com forum, BlackSuperhero.com, which was an excellent site. I think it's still around, but the webmaster pretty much said that he doesn't have the time to devote to it anymore. But the forum, one of the questions was dealt with a guy that was being set up on a blind date or something, and the date was going well until he mentioned he collected comic books. And then he might as well have mentioned he was a drug dealer. I was amazed that this woman had a problem with this man collecting comic books, and yet we have men putting their foots up the asses of young women on a daily basis. Shout out to 50 Cent. Shout out to French Montana, allegedly. And yet collecting comic books, books that could be worth, books that are actually saving homes, saving houses from foreclosure. I whatever. You can see, but I just would mention, with full disclosure, I don't think I've actually mentioned my comic book collecting, not really thinking about it. Now I would think about it, but I never really mentioned it. Darryl, what are your thoughts on that whole thing? They were going in about it, and people had a lot to say. Even those who are married, they have to kind of keep it on the DL, the original definition of DL, by the way. Go ahead.
Okay, the article survey writer was Sonia Harris from Comics Should Be Good, connected to Comic Book Resources. And it dealt with a various amounts of like comic book, your comic book habits in public, in private, and around loved ones, you know? And speaking of the dude, I've had four real deep girlfriends in my life, okay? Three of them were comic book readers themselves before they met me. So the one that was outside, I actually got her hooked on Strangers in Paradise by Terry Moore. Because she was like, I don't see the attraction, it's all kinks and tights. And I just handed her the first Terry Moore, Strangers in Paradise, and I had to pick up the volumes for her because she got into the story. All right? To me, you have to hide anything that is a passion of yours from a loved one. It is not a true relationship. I say that unabashed, all right? People have seen me. They see me wear my anime shirts. They see me wear my Wolverine shirts on nights out. They see me wear... I do not hide that I read comics. I do not hide that I love fantasy and sci-fi. If you love me, then you're loving the whole package.
So you're not closeted.
I am not closeted whatsoever. And as a result, I get people all the time that see me reading comics and trains, that see me wearing this stuff in the bars. Like, they just come walking up to me. Hey, sir, I've seen your shirt. Can I ask you a question about this movie? Can I ask you a question about this? Similar to the mom that wrote you that letter to begin the week, that wanted to know about comics for the son. I've gotten that question numerous times. Just from strangers. You know, it seems like so much. I don't know how to get into it, you know. But I will say this. There was nothing romantic coming from it. It was more informational. If it's romance, then, you know, in the beginning you see that. Then I toned that down a little bit if it's romance. But, all right, but I will say this. Wait. They ask the questions. Go ahead.
All right, let's go to the lines. Quickly, I just want to ask the captain on this, but I want to go to the lines first. Okay, caller, this is the Comic Shop. We got a few minutes remaining. 703, what's up?
Hey, everybody, this is Bison from D.C. How you doing?
Hi.
Pretty good, man, as always. What are your thoughts?
Hey, like anything else, I think if you got to hide who you are, then, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that's a part of a relationship I think you're going to sacrifice. I've been married almost 15 years, and, you know, that's been a part of who I am. It's part of who I am long before I got married. You know, it's cool now, but back in the 80s, riding the subway, reading dark height, you know, back then, but I didn't have to worry about it. I'm over 6'3 and 2 something, so I never had to deal with that. So I think that's a stereotype like anything else. You know, all comic book lovers and sci-fi lovers aren't living in their parents' basement and social misfits. That's just a stereotype that's kind of common that people like to run with. So I don't go with that at all.
I live the stereotype, though. I freely admit I live in a basement. I have one room devoted to comics, and being less than 6 foot, I have felt the sting of getting beaten up because of my love. So, you know, that's real talk right there, folks. Go ahead, Doc.
Well, listen, I want to open up something because we got to go to another topic. I'll say this quickly, not to be grotesque, but the way things are with masculinity, that's really for an Afro radio topic. I wanted to ask the women who are listening. Pick your poison. Either you can go for some DL dude who is secretly baloney washing, or you can go for Daryl B, who's reading a graphic novel of Black Panther. Pick your poison. The baloney washer or the comic book reader who has an extensive vocabulary. I'm just saying. It's going to be really very silly. You got to have hobbies. Sorry. Got to have hobbies.
And in the background, Captain is just dying laughing right now at this one.
This is good. It's good.
Can I ask another question?
I think, make it quick, real quick, then I get another, go to another topic quickly.
Okay. Basically, yes, no. I know we want a Black Panther movie, but would you accept maybe a Black owner-created superhero? I think number 13 is kind of moving along. I've been seeing stills from that.
Of course.
I mean, is it time for us to develop our own type
of
hero?
We would love it.
We've got to wait for something to fall from Hollywood.
Yes.
We would love it. We've been campaigning for, you know, we know we got a lot of talented African-American men and ladies out there with the large imaginations. We want that. We just need the backing. We need a George Lucas behind us, i.e. Red Tails, where he says, go ahead, create it, I'll support it. Make sure it's quality. That's what we want. That's the dream.
Okay, guys.
Well, you know what?
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you, Bison. It's okay. Thank you. I'll just say quickly that I agree with you wholeheartedly. The only problem with Black Panther is he is so well written. One of the few. There's other characters. Falcon, I'm not crazy about, to be honest with you. He's low power. But the fact that this guy runs his own country, LL Cool J said it best in NCIS Los Angeles. Runs his own country. He's a superhero. He's an intellect on par with anybody. One of the greatest minds in the Marvel Universe. Who wouldn't like a guy like that? If he was poorly written, I would say, whatever. But Black Panther is essentially the Black Batman analog. He's better than Batman, if you want to be honest. Better than Iron Man. He's on his own country, for Christ's sake. I want to see that. I was going to be honest with you. But we should be able to see a number of heroes on screen. That's it. Gentlemen, I want to talk about Shazam. We're going to have to go into it next week. We actually have a Shazam of color, a little girl. I thought that was pretty cool, Daryl. Let's be honest.
Yes, that's cool. I just don't like darkening Billy Batson, and we'll get into that next week. That's my problem with it.
I like him dark. All right. Once again, folks, we're going next door for After Earth featuring Captain Kirk. It's been real, Daryl, as always. Q, hold on if you like. Call back. Next door, After Earth Radio next.
Enjoy, yo.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
Mr. Wilson, you've done just fine on the Rorschach. Your papers are in good order. The file's fine. No difficulty with your motor skills. And I think you're probably pretty ready for this job. We got one more kind of psychological test we always do here. It's just a word association. I'll throw you out a few words. Anything that comes to your mind, just throw back at me, okay? It's just kind of an arbitrary thing. Like if I said dog, you'd say...
Tree.
Tree. Dog?
Tree.
Fast?
Slow.
Rain?
Snow.
White?
Black.
Bean?
Pod.
Negro?
Whitey.
Tar baby?
What'd you say?
Tar baby.
Buffet.
Colored.
Redneck.
Jungle bunny.
Peck of wood.
Burrhead.
Cracker.
Spear chucker.
White trash.
Jungle bunny.
Hunky.
Spade.
Hunky, hunky.
Nigger.
Dead hunky.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock of...
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. This is the second half of the Grindhouse. Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternoon Radio. The call-in number, once again, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Feel free to call in. The water is warm. Let's go to a quick groove. Folks, we're going to make this a very quick, sharp show. A lot to discuss. That was the infamous SNL word association skit, Chevy Chase, the late, great Richard Pryor. Doesn't get any better. So, again, quick groove, then the discourse. This is Chris Malinchek. I think I pronounced it correctly. Chris Malinchek, so good to me. So good to me. Let's groove. We'll be right back.
On occasion, folks, I let things ride. Again, Chris Malinchek, so good to me. Give you the best of urban alternative groove, folks. This is Afro Nerd Radio. Folks, could not do the show without the captain. Captain, it's your time. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Word up, my G. Word up. Word up, my G. Let's get started. You understand what I'm saying? Do a show like this today. You know what I'm saying? That's what's good. What's good, Afro? What's good? Everything straight? Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it.
I think you're getting confused with minstrel programming, sir. You know we don't get down like that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, just a personal note. I want to give a shout-out to the Wedger, who is also my mother. You know, I call the Oracle, the tangential producer of the show, who is my father. Conversely, there is the Wedger. Today's her birthday, so happy birthday, Mom. Moving things right along, folks, I want to talk about something that I've been observing as of late, recently. Maybe it came on the heels of Rachel Jontel's testimony during the Trayvon Martin trial. I don't really want to get into that so specifically. I really don't want to ratchet that up. But it's something that I noticed, and I think I was speaking to Captain Kirk's predecessor, Mr. Starks, and I was saying that, you know, I think we've come full circle where black is the new white and gay is the new black. Let me repeat that. Black is the new white and gay is the new black. Now, the listenership is probably saying, what the hell is Afro Nerd talking about? Well, I'm going to play a couple of clips here and there of yours truly on urban radio. And it's disturbing what's out here, folks, as to how you're supposed to think. Now, what I mean by black is the new white is that in the early 70s, and even before then, there used to be this thing very much in the black tradition of pointing out the phoniness of white culture and white racists. Just being phony. I think of an episode of Good Times when, I don't remember the exact premise of the episode, but I do remember that, I don't know, maybe it was an insurance salesman or some white person had to visit the Evans residence, and the family and the camera was zooming in on this white man's behavior in a black home. And the scene was pretty funny, pretty insightful. They offered him a glass of water, and the camera zooms in on the white gentleman holding the glass of water, and he put his index finger around the rim. He was circling the rim of the glass as if to, I don't know, protect himself from germs or to put his white essence on this black-owned glass. It was insane. And I never forgot that episode because you saw James Evans, you saw the family give each other that look like, look at this fool here. Look at this phony. That was the hallmark of blackness. And it was the hallmark of black politics where we were able to masterfully invert arguments and show that white racism at its core was about discomfort and phoniness. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm starting to see that with what's going on in black culture. I'm starting to see it. When Rachel Jontel was asked about the term creepy cracker, she looked at the attorney straight in the face and said, no, that's not a racist term. I don't think it's racist. No, not really. When you have all these the lower tier set that has come to the assistance of Jontel and saying that she did great on the stand when she didn't. You're the lead witness and you screwed up and you can't call it like it is. We have to say, we have to pretend, oh, she's beautiful. She's a beautiful girl. She did, you know, she's from the streets. We have to get a special interpreter. We have to get a, you know, she's from a different culture. There's a different cultural standard. All these things, all these excuse building, all that is a type of phoniness. You know, when Dr. Cosby came out and he talked about the truth really can't be deconstructed. Can't be deconstructed. We're seeing, I guess, I hate to say it, but queer black youth, 12, 13 years old, professing their penchant. They're professing their penchant for oral sex on men in the street, rapping about it proudly. I don't even know if you consider them gay kids. I don't know what they are. I don't know what that is. And I don't want to lambaste gay folk, but this is something different. I think this is something different to be that vulgar. And to be fair, if they were rapping heterosexually, it would be equally as vulgar. But there's something extra about this gay thing. That's the dirty laundry that Dr. Cosby has talked about. And when you call it for what it is, there's a contingent of black folk that will tell you, no, that's not it. No, we're victims. That's a type of phoniness, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm going to prove it to you this evening. So I'm going to play two clips. One clip, I wasn't involved in it, just a clip of Al Sharpton Radio. Matter of fact, Reverend Sharpton was not on this particular broadcast. It's his show, but I forgot the gentleman's name, but he had someone there to fill in. And it's just a snippet of how they are viewing the Martin case. It's just urban radio. And when you see how some of the callers are articulating their viewpoint and the holes in the viewpoint and the non sequiturs in the the non sequiturs in their viewpoints, it is a type of phoniness, folks. We've come full circle where black is the new white. I say it again. Black is the new white, and gay is the new black, because now the gay folks are gaining access, they're gaining rights, and they're cutting folks down when they feel that they are being disrespected, and rightfully so. If you say the F word, or if you say anything untoward gay folk, gay culture, they will cut you down. As a youngster, I remember black folks having that ability. Not anymore. Matter of fact, with the Paula Deen fiasco, the plaintiff in the Paula Deen case is a white manager. She is the one that saw all this aberrant behavior by, I think more specifically, by Deen's brother. But she's the one that saw this disrespect and felt uncomfortable. It's a white plaintiff that's pursuing the case on behalf of the black folks that were there. Okay, this is a new age right now, and we have to talk about it. With Rick Ross offending women with his Molly comments, giving Molly to unsuspecting women, it was white women that were in the forefront of him losing his sponsorship with Mountain Dew. It wasn't the black folks. Not really. Not really. Not really. All right, enough of me waxing. Let's go to this clip. This is Al Sharpton, he's not in, but just to give you a taste of how urban radio conducts itself. Let's see. Here we go. Hold on.
If that is a fact, the case, the prosecutor will use that in the closing argument.
I surely do hope so. 877-532-5797. Let's go to line 3. Chris joining us from New Jersey, listening on XM 110. Chris, you got George Curry. Need the skinny version, man.
Yeah, real quick, yeah. First of all, my heart goes out to the Trayvon family, his mother and father, because I have a young son like that. I couldn't imagine. But we all know what really happened that day. We do know. We have an idea of what took place. But I'll tell you this much. He had an interview on TV with his lawyer. Not one time, if he was this neighborhood watch, this guy that was supposed to be this good guy for society and all that, watching the neighborhood, if it was a misunderstanding and things took place, not one time did he apologize to the family. and say, I'm sorry for this misunderstanding. You know, it happened. You know, I didn't really mean to. You know, he showed no remorse for taking this young man's life. That bothers me.
Well, in all fairness, he did make an apology. George Zimmerman did a public apology to the family.
I must have missed that.
We appreciate that call, though, Chris. Thank you so much. Let's appreciate that call, Brian. Let's go line one. Connie in Manchester, Connecticut. Connie, I need you to be real quick for me. Go ahead. You got George Curry. Connie on line one in Manchester. All right, let's go to line five. Janice in Cleveland, listening on 1300 WJMO. Janice, you got George Curry. Need you to be quick. Okay, well, then that's...
Zimmerman knew exactly what he was doing when he shot Trey Martin. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he did exactly what he is up here on this earth to do, and he has no business here, and there is nothing that this law that you guys have down here is going to do to George Zimmerman, because this is exactly what you guys do. Now, as far as us, our black men, you start... Because we is about peace. And they better not walk out this house without they peacemaker to keep peace out here. See, y'all got us out armed. We're not armed. And you got us walking around all these devils. But you done armed the devil with a pistol, and you calling him the police. But that white man is the devil, and they here to kill us. And you guys have no business unarming nobody on the face of this planet Earth, because this is God's Earth. And God said, thou shalt form no weapon against thee. So why do you have them formed?
Appreciate the call, Janice. George, we got to get your final thoughts, man.
Well, as I said, they'll wrap up today. I suspect they'll hold a closing argument to Monday. I'm sure that's probably what the prosecution want to do, and they will hear his defense, and then we'll see and make our own decision. But so far, I'm not impressed with anything that Zimmerman has said, because his statements are inconsistent.
Make sure you keep up with George Curry's website. His website is George.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go to another clip. Now, this is yours truly on Joe Madison's show. And let me first say that, you know, we played multiple clips from Shauna Renee, who is his daughter, on Sirius XM, and Joe Madison is to be respected. He is a broadcast radio legend. I'm not going to take anything away from his career. But he does, in my estimation, a type of radio that he has critiqued. He has critiqued Rush Limbaugh. He has critiqued Sean Hannity. He has critiqued Bill O'Reilly. And the way he treated me and not being able to talk truth to power and to cut you off in mid-sentence and that kind of thing, it's a sticky stachoma. It's a stachoma, sticky type of radio where, God bless him, it's his show, but it's not really based on any truth. And I'm never going to call back once again. I'm not. And he has a thing where you can't use a code name. I couldn't be Afro Nerd. I had to be DJ. He's has a problem with folks who use pseudonyms for whatever reason. He doesn't like sort of listen. However he wants to conduct the show, whatever. But either our show is going to come. It's going to be about real discourse and allowing folks to fully realize their ideas and their opinions, or it's all about cutting you off in mid sentence and pushing through and not really being real, not really being real. So the first one, just a quick comment. With the Al Sharpton show, the first caller said, "We know what really happened. We know what really happened." No, you don't. You don't know what really happened. But to put that out there, we know what happened. No, you don't. You don't. And then, you know, the emotionalism. Catherine talks about this very masterfully. That some of us are, we have a type of emotionalism that is sometimey. It's sometimey. You know, we pick and choose, we cherry pick our emotions. So we're not looking at it fair. So, and also the other caller went into white devils, they're killing us, the white. Really? Really? You know, 1950s, 1940s, 1930s, and going beyond that, you had the Knight Riders. The Knight Riders going into black homes, burning crosses, bombing churches? Oh, certainly. Oh, yes. It's not 1950. 2013 now. Nine people in one house in Brooklyn at a party shot up.
multiple things. We have the Black Klan now. What is she talking about? What is she talking about, Captain? Please, that's urban radio. No real discussion, no real unpacking of ideas. You don't have, you can call up here and disagree with the captain or myself. You can do that, and I will give you the courtesy of completion. Okay, let's go to Marsh Tacoma Radio. This is, he's a legend, but I don't really dig what he did. This is Joe Madison, Afro Nerd. Let's get to it. Hold on.
All right. Somebody pick up and find out if Douglas is breathing. Let's go to DJ, first-time caller from New York.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Madison.
Hey.
Listen, I want to take a different take on this
as
a New Yorker.
All right.
I think that Black folks should not be surprised that if they if we start to go through white folks' trunks, go through their belongings, that you'll find something. I don't think we'll be surprised about that. I guess my only problem is I think we should become more sophisticated and start demanding that we look at white folk more closely and at the same time look at ourselves as far as how we, as far as our appearance, as far as young Black folk.
Slow down. Wait a minute. I got the first part.
Right.
And what was the second part about appearance?
What I'm saying is the police can provide you a composite as to what they think a criminal in
urban
America
looks
like.
No. Listen, my man, with all due respect to you, you just heard people call into the Madison show who said, Joe, Mr. Madison, I'm coming home from school with a book bag full of books. Hey, Mr. Madison, I've been stopped 4 times coming from a grocery store. Mr. Madison, I've just been walking down the street. Excuse me, what the hell does a criminal look like? What's a composite of a kid with his pants hanging down? That's a criminal? What, the baseball cap? You tell me. Sir, come on. They do have a composite. You're between the ages of 14 and 24 and Black. That's their image. That's the point about the profile. That's what the case is involved on.
Well, I think what you're telling me. I'm not disputing
that. No, I'm not telling you
that.
I mean, think about it.
Can I have the courtesy of completion?
No, I am, look, don't tell me how to do my show. I'll be courteous when you'll be intelligent about it. You sit up here and talk about the police can provide you a profile? Give me a break. Let me ask you, are you an African American?
Yes, I am.
Do you look like a criminal?
No, I don't.
How do I know that? Well, yeah. Tell me what a, and here's what I want
to
hear. Now, No, you can't answer this question. You're the one that brought it up. You called my show, and you are an African. Look, let me help you out here. Brother, this is my courtroom, my playpen. I'm in charge. So now slow down. You already stated your premise. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. You give me a profile of what a criminal looks like.
Criminals wear a uniform like anyone else. If a criminal can't be considered a vocation. If you look at those who are in law enforcement, those who are on the legal side will tell you that there, as far as some young Black men, they do come across a certain type of, say, costume.
Give me, sir, you're just talking. Give me, what do they wear? Give me what a criminal wears and you can stop 106% of Black folk. Tell me what the profile is. Just give me a description. That's all I'm asking for. You're not doing that. Give it to me and that's why I didn't interrupt you. You're not telling me what does a young Black criminal look like?
Hip hop attire. Whether it be saggy pants.
Do me a favor. Do you understand the word goodbye? Goodbye. Have a good day.
What a snob.
God. Well, Excuse me, my intern, Mr. Bunch. See, I told you pull up your pants because you look like a criminal when you walk through here. Didn't I tell you that? See, we told you because you're going to be profiled. You walk, if you're in New York City, and you, that's why, now it explains why 106% get stopped. You know, think about this. Now, wait a minute. So Bernie Madoff, biggest, boy, you're going to have me cursing with these seven-year-olds listening. Biggest criminal that stole billions of dollars, right? You think he has saggy pants? Wait a minute. That's why I said, oh, give me the courtesy of letting me finish. No, brother, no. Let's deal with this directly. Excuse me. What does a criminal look like? What does a criminal, and then he proceeds, oh, baggy pants. That's why I said, give me a description. Well, damn it. Then there ain't no sense in, you know. See, you see, that's why I deserve to, I have to have the right to hang up. Because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Baggy pants.
All right. Oh, boy. It's almost laughable, Captain. I'm pretty thick-skinned. You know where this is going to go, right? Now, Rob Redding, God bless him, he gave me a whipping and a shellacking. The lower tier. What's the lower tier? I don't know what that is. When he sees it, well, I have a number of audio snippets from myself and Redding where he's coming around. Not so funny anymore. Now, this gentleman is a radio legend. I'm going to be respectful. But no discourse was going on there. Wasn't really allowed to, you know. And I should really have given some backstory. They were talking about stop and frisk, and they were talking about another stat that came out that said that, for the audience, there's a controversy that our mayor is involved in now, Mayor Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, where he made an offhand comment about he felt that NYPD, New York Police Department, should be stopping more minorities and that they're already stopping too many whites. And he said it off the cuff, said it inartfully. People are upset. But if you're going by statistics, but considering if you're going to go by stats, matching the amount of crime that's occurring in inner-city communities, what he's saying, it, rather inartfully, does make some sense. Now, the flip side of the stat that should be explored, however, is for the few whites that are being stopped, they're finding more stuff. So this is what you have. This is what's happening here. You're stopping more blacks and browns, finding less stuff. You're stopping less whites, finding more stuff. Okay, that's a fair stat. So what I said is, okay, if we're going to go by that, then black folks should be more vocal about maybe you need to be stopping more whites. I said that. He liked that. But when I started getting into critiquing black folks, didn't like that, cut me off, didn't want to hear it. And now we have to pretend that there's no such thing as a profile. And I forgot once again, Captain, I'm assuming I did it with his daughter. I'm assuming that what everybody knows is a profile. Interestingly enough, after 9/11, majority black folks statistically felt comfortable in profiling Muslims. Let me repeat that. Black folks who are front and center about profiling being a moral wrong, just the concept of profiling, and he didn't like the word composite either. The concept of profiling for many blacks, not all black folk, and some browns also. They don't like the concept of a profile. Okay, I hear you. But why did you not mind there being a concept of a profile when terrorism is at stake and it's the Muslim brother now? What happened? I thought you said you didn't believe there was a profile. Folks, if you're going to continue listening to the show, have that third eye ready. because I'm coming. The captain's coming. I have more. I want the captain to speak, and I'll tell you where this gentleman who refused to allow me the courtesy of completion, which he hated me. He hated that. Okay. But are we going to have a discussion, or are we going to have you imitating Rush Limbaugh? The liberal Rush Limbaugh. Captain, what are your thoughts?
Well, here's the reality of the situation. Here's the reality. Black and brown do more violent crimes, especially in the impoverished areas. That's really what we're talking about in the impoverished situation. Right? That's number one. Number two, there's a profile for everything. There's a profile for everything as per rule, whether it's written down or whether it's not written down. If you see a person in a police uniform, they might not be a police officer, but you will present yourself towards this particular individual as if they're what? A police officer. Because there is power in the uniform. That's why they charge you for impersonating a police officer. Just as you see a person walking down the street with some nice rim glasses that cost about $450 and in a nice suit that looks about $700, you automatically assume, it might not be a right assumption, could be a big-time criminal, but you automatically assume right off the bat that there's certain things going on with this individual because of the uniform that they have on. Now, based on the laws that they have, what the police officers are really doing, they're doing a George Bush preemptive strike. They're really not supposed to be doing it based on the laws, based on our Bill of Rights and everything else. But the police also have a gray area. And the reason why police and everyone does this is because the emotional thinking that's going on. If we block out the emotion and we just look at the statistics, to tell you the truth, you should be, if you're really, to tell you the truth, in the impoverished neighborhoods, you should be going hard because that's the violent crime if you're looking to protect life. And also, the truth be told, who has the most drugs? Who has the most guns? It's the white people. We know that. Who's the ones going hunting and everything? They have the legitimate guns, and they have the illegitimate guns. So really, you should be doing both, to tell you the truth. If we just put away everything, put away all the emotion. So this is what's really happening now at this given time. No one wants to really do anything what they're supposed to do within the law. And the law at times is not necessarily correct. You know, it's just what the law is. Everybody is just buying for position behind emotion. Even when you call Zen on the show, he's being emotional because he has to be the top dog because that's his show. That's the way he does it. So he's not going to give you an opportunity to one-up him in any way, shape, or form. That's just the way it's done. That's just what he's doing. So back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd. Continue.
Yeah, and we have calls. We're going to open the lines again. I believe our friend Q-Storm is off. I've had him on hold for a while, but that was during the last segment. I want to bring him in. I believe it might be Sergio, it might be Kim. I'm not sure. Anyway, I'm going to open the lines in a moment. Just one more point. You know, the DC sniper from a few years back, DC sniper and his young protege, I believe the elder was executed. I believe the protege is still around. Anyway, would you believe, Captain, I hate being this intelligent. I really do. It's a burden. It's like Professor X, Captain. Would you believe, ladies and gentlemen, that these two probably would not have been caught because they were looking for white men? You know, that type of serial killing is so much a white male type of crime that no one was looking for black men. It's a crime where black men weren't profiled for that. The profile didn't fit that, so they weren't looking for that initially. There was some, they continued doing it. You know, they were sick people. You know, if they shut it down, not that I approve of it, because, I mean, it was a horror show. I remember that. I know you remember it too, Captain. It was scary. Folks were afraid to go outside. And the whole thing is, they weren't looking for black men. They weren't looking for black men. They didn't fit the profile. I told them a story, I believe the last show, of a woman in Westchester who looked to be a moneyed upper crust, white, Westchester County female, tooling around in her Mercedes, has a mansion, goes to equestrian classes with her children, and neighbors didn't know what was going on. Someone dropped dime on her, to use a street colloquialism, dropped dime on her and said, hey, Miss So-and-so has thousands of marijuana plants in a warehouse in Queens, New York. She didn't fit the profile. No one was looking for her. And when he talked about Bernie Madoff, you know, this is what happens when you do a Tacoma type of radio. There are different profiles of different crimes. Bernie Madoff, we're talking about insider trading. We're talking about corporate stock trading crime. I mean, I guess in his world, if we were to walk into, oh, I don't know, Chase Manhattan or some stock company, some investment banking firm, I'm to assume that it's fair game to see your hedge fund manager to have a do-rag on with double earrings and saggy pants, because that's the world we live in. I don't expect to see a Brooks Brothers suit and wingtips. I guess that's not the profile. I guess everyone is open. And if we go to, oh, I don't know, Trenton Avenue, somewhere in the Bronx, we're going to see someone wearing a blue and gray vest, or a blue blazer, gray wool pants and brogues with a do-rag on or what have you, and we're going to expect him to be dealing drugs. I doubt it. There is a uniform for the type of crime you're committing. There's a profile for the meth dealer. There's a profile for the insider trader. There's a profile for the serial killer. I mean, there's a profile, and black folks better recognize, as they say.
Criminal Minds, great show, all about profiling.
Professional profilers, and they're very rarely wrong. You know what, Captain? You've known me for a while. I'm very rarely wrong because I profile people. You know why?
Yep.
We're New Yorkers. All right, let's over the lines. Imagine going into...
Let's go 312.
Imagine going to a high-level investment banking firm. And am I really going to expect an insider trader that's responsible for a millions of dollars portfolio with a do-rag on and gold teeth and earrings because the profile doesn't exist? All right, Mr. Madison, time for your medication. All right, 312, welcome to Afro Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Kim Success calling from Chicago.
Hey, Kim.
Nice to hear from you.
Hey. Yeah, y'all covered a lot. That guy, Joe Madison, I don't listen to any radio except for Christian contemporary radio. I used to listen to Rush and Hannity back in the day, but since Obama got in office, they got two races where their racism clouded their judgment, so I had to stop listening to them. And black radio, you showed exactly why I don't listen to black radio, because they continue to foster these stereotypes. He would rather argue with you to let men have their pants baggy than to use his radio audience to say, how about we pull up our pants, black man, and do something different. It's like they continue to foster these stereotypes, and as long as you keep telling people that they're doing wrong and you keep testifying to that, or you keep instigating that and keep allowing that, it's like where are the voices of people to tell people to put their pants up? Oh, the parent has to do that. Back in the day that everybody want to go back to, the neighbor used to do that. So I don't even listen to that, and, you know, I apologize because you had to deal with that, because he wasn't ready to listen to any dialogue that's different than what the toe line is, because I think that's how the conservatives say it, that we want to toe the line and don't want to hear anything different, and he definitely made that example clear. He didn't want to hear anything you had to say, even though what you were saying was right. He didn't want to hear that at all. That's what I have to say.
And you're right, Kim, and he's doing the black community a disservice, and also this whole thing about not being able to – have discourse that might be slightly different than his own, or even being open to, okay, let's look at your idea. Let's look at your idea and see where you go left, where you go right. He wouldn't do that. I mean, it's kind of a sticky radio to me. It's dishonest. And what we do here, you can spout your opinion to the rafters, and we will analyze it. You know, we will give our opinions, but we will allow you to say what you think, and we will respectfully disagree. But this whole thing of slow down, who's speeding? I thought I was quite calm, but it's sticky radio. You know, and that's probably the difficulty in us moving to a different format, because we're not acting like black folk are supposed to act in this box kind of thing. And when the caller called up on Al Sharpton's show talking about white devils and they're killing us, what? That doesn't bear any war. What? Go to Chicago. Please go to Chicago. Well, you're there, Kim.
Right, and the other thing I wanted to add, too, was you're consistently showing that we're not consistent in our argument. We're not consistent in our values. Now, you have the whole world watching George Zimmerman, but how many people are going to watch Hadia Pendleton? They're not going to put it on the thing. So you have all these black men going to jail for killing these black children. Nobody says anything, but you want to get on George Zimmerman. I know he did it and everything is wrong with it, just like you said, but where is the outcry? Where the riot in Chicago, Los Angeles, New York for killing the black people? Where's the riot for that? Show me the riot for that, and then I'll listen to George Zimmerman. Right now, George, I mean, you know, this is things you shouldn't say, God forgive me, because I have boys. But if Trayvon Martin was already down that road, give him 5 or 10 years. If it wasn't Zimmerman, it would have been a brother of his.
Well,
so
listen,
where is that outcry?
Well, you know what, Kim? You're at the right place, because we really open up these stories, and no one wants to tread this territory, because when he got into his Facebook and the hip-hop posing and his girlfriend kind of acting on a street tip, the girlfriend or friend is representative of his cipher, and it doesn't mean that he deserved death, certainly not by any stretch of the imagination, but when you hear callers say, we know what really happened. When we see on YouTube and World Star Hip Hop, we see unarmed young black males, young black Hispanic males, hitting people without provocation with open fists. And robbing them. It's going down like that. But we have this whole thing of, well, he was unarmed. It doesn't really mean much. It doesn't mean that it's not possible that he could have jumped out of a bush and smacked George Zimmerman around. And also, we're disingenuous about black versus brown, because Aaron Hernandez is up on murder charges now for killing a black person. But no one cares about that, because it's black versus brown. We're not confused with Hernandez. We're confused with the name Zimmerman. When Zimmerman came out and we didn't see him, we thought it was different. Then we had to stick with this trope, because his name was Zimmerman. We didn't expect to see a brown man there. Do you know how laughable it is? Do you know how laughable it is, Kim, to see black folk get incensed and create T-shirts using the term cracker on a brown man? You got cracker emblazoned over Pedro. It's laughable. But we're stuck. That's the whole deal. We can't go back. Because when it's black versus black, or even black versus brown, or brown versus brown, we really don't care. That's what it is. That's the truth, and it can't be deconstructed. It can't.
Next call.
Let's call Kim. Hold on. Appreciate the call. Let's go to another Chicago native, I believe.
Okay.
All right. We'll go to 484 after. We'll go to 484 after. Sorry about that. We'll go to another 312, then 484. 312? Is this Serge?
Yeah, Sergio. Yeah, it's me. Right. I wanted to tell you, I want to give a plug because it ties into what you're talking about. This coming Monday on Shadow and Act, I did an interview last week with Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan, the actor. And Ryan Coogler directed a film called Fruitvale Station, which has been getting nothing but raves. It premiered at Sundance and it played at the Cannes Film Festival. And it's the movie about Oscar Grant. And Oscar Grant was this young black man who back in 2009 was shot by a white cop in San Francisco at a subway station.
The video of it.
And there's a film of it. He's made this film about it with Michael Jordan playing the lead. So, you know, I was asked, did I want to interview him for Shadow and Act? And I said, sure, because there was one question I had to ask him. I said, one question I really had to ask him. And I asked him both of them. And the question is what you just mentioned. How come when a black man is killed by a white guy, all black people are outraged? But if it's a black man killing another black man, people just wring their hands and say it's terrible. It's because a black guy is more important when he's killed by a white guy? Some reason he has a higher status? Aren't the results the same? You know? And I won't give it away. You'll see it Monday on Shadow and Act. You'll see his answer. But both of them had to agree with me. They can't disagree with me. They had to agree with me. Yes. And actually, Coogler, you know, he was actually really intense. He's a very intense guy. And he said that black-on-black crime, in his opinion, is the greatest human rights issue affecting black people since slavery.
Yep. Yeah, it's got to be addressed. And what you said, Sergio, these people have to be prepared to take from Michael Carroll to deconstruct arguments. You can disagree with me and the captain, but can you take it apart?
But the reason why is because you can't. Unlike Coogler, you can't admit that. You know, it's hard for black people to say the problem is us. It's easier to say it's the white man's fault. Now, if every black guy was being killed by white people, if this was the 1930s or the 1920s or turn of the century where black men were being lynched every day by white people, okay, then you have an argument. But it's easier, it's more convenient to say it's them. What about us? No, it's them. But, you know, you talk about Hydrea Pendleton. The woman mentioned Hydrea Pendleton. Also, don't forget, there's another factor going on, which people don't like when I say this, but there's an optics, what they call optics vision, right? If what's the kid's name? If Trayvon Martin looked like Chief Keef, would people care?
Well, which he did later on, he looked like Chief Keef, but his early pictures were more cherubic. They were more photogenic.
Right. Everybody talks about he's a cute kid, right? He's a cute kid. I think, I really believe that's a large issue about it. It's because of the optics. He's a really cute looking kid.
5 years ago. 5 years ago.
No, he was still a cute kid. He was still, you know. I mean, even Hydrate. You know,
look at his Facebook. Look at what George Zimmerman looked at. Not quite that football player from like when he was 13 years old. Not quite. Serge, you got to go to another call. As always, we got time. Thanks. As always, man. Appreciate it. Let's go to 484. I think. Is this Q? My memory's failing me.
Yes.
484?
This is Q Storm.
Yes. Your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, I was actually just listening to the show, but, I mean, I have an opinion on this is a really hot show. I mean,
go ahead, great show.
It'll get harder in a few moments because we're going to talk about the N-word special with Don Lemon, for if you can get it, squeeze that in. So,
well, real quick, I was just going to say yeah, I listened to the clip, and, you know, I don't know. I guess profiling is a necessary evil. I'm on the fence with it. It seems to be a violation of our constitutional rights, but I guess it's a necessary evil. I don't disavow anything you've said about it. I completely understand where you're coming from, and that's what that radio host needs to understand. You have to be willing to open your ears to have an informed debate. So that you can possibly affect some change and affect some good. If I just shut you down, that doesn't help either party. That was the most deplorable, non-journalistic, if that's the right word, thing I've ever heard. And you are right on point. Like I say, you know, I listen to your show all the time. I agree with you 90% of the time. Political correctness, I have to give it to you, Effner, it's killing us. That was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. How can you just shut someone down when you on a radio show where you encourage callers to call in and not foment debate? I don't understand that at all.
Well, you know what? I'll
be 47 years old in August. I've never been profiled. You know why? Maybe it's because I've never had my pants sagging down. Maybe I've never bought Timberlands that were three sizes too big for me. Maybe I never wore a do-rag. I don't know. But I've never been profiled in 47 years of existence on this planet.
And even if you were, once they stop you, the way you articulate your words, they're going
done.
To let you go.
It's done. Matter of fact, for those who might kind of slip into that profile thing, but they're not that profile, it's like a two-minute conversation.
Yep.
It's a two-minute conversation. It just is. And look at this as the urban-style data mining that Snowden is in trouble for right now. It's urban data mining. Everyone, listen, black folks are statistically on data mining. This is what I don't understand. They have to explain it to me. When it comes to terrorism and data mining, they did stats on black folks really don't care about it. It's not even being discussed on black radio. They just think of it, they think of it as a necessary evil. Okay, if that's the case, then what's your problem with urban data mining then? It's the urban data mining. It's intra-racial terrorism that requires a type of data mining. If we're talking about mainstream terrorism, then that goes with technological cyber data mining. It is what it is. It's not occurring in a vacuum. Let's get our numbers like Asian numbers, because they're not stopping the Asian man. They're not, because the perception is not there. I talked about this months ago, Q, and I mean this sincerely. There was a gentleman, I think it was to the Washington Post, you might want to look this up, where he proposed a type of cultural shift not unlike what happened with China. People look at China a lot differently. 20 years ago, not the case. China made a conscious effort to turn their image around. We've got to do some kind of turnaround with black imagery. Get rid of this neo-minstrelsy. We got to tweak some things. We have to admit that our image is not looking the greatest, man. Stop rocking these double earrings and all that nonsense, man. Tighten up your look. I'm just saying. The D.C. sniper, people were shocked it was a black duo. They were shocked. They weren't even on the radar because they didn't fit the profile. This is not rocket science, or maybe it is. Q, as always. You know what? I'm gonna have you hold on. Usually I'm trying to make these things short. I can't have everyone holding on, but I'm gonna have you hold on for this one because we only got about 5 minutes. I want to play a clip of the CNN N-Words show that Don Lemon. I think Don Lemon is channeling the voice or channeling the ghost of now Al Jazeera correspondent Soledad O'Brien. So he's doing this N-word special. And I'm going to say this briefly, Captain. I don't give a damn about the N-word. I just don't care. Listen, when you have your bag of justice that I mentioned last week, Captain, yeah, I'm going to go there. When you have your wet wipes, you have your floss, and your clean smell, you're clean smelling Negro that I am. I'll say it that way. I'll use that in word. And I'm around some of these corporate types. I'll be kind. And you see what they're going through, the smells. I am superior. I'm sorry. I don't believe the N-word. White folks got it wrong about the planet being flat. So if they invented the N-word, they might have gotten this wrong too. Just because a white person calls you that doesn't mean that it is correct. They got the world being flat wrong. So it's safe to assume they got this wrong too. I'm just saying. But to constantly go on and on about the N-word and all this emphasis, all this angst, all this deliberation, it's madness, man. No one has this ambiguity but us. Why? Why? Pitbull has a song called Latinos in Paris. He didn't have S-word in Paris. Didn't have it. Not rocket science, folks. All right. This is the best clip on the entire show. Wynton Marsalis, legendary band leader, jazz artist, bar none. He kicks it, and it's enough said. Wynton Marsalis on the N-word on the Don Lemon special. Hold on.
At the box office. I don't have anything to drink. Can I get you All right, and joining me now as soon as Nichelle Turner, we're talking here about
this.
Nichelle Turner, yes. Wynton Marsalis, the managing artistic director of Jazz at Lincoln Center, and Michael Skolnick, editor-in-chief of GlobalGrind.com. Why do you think celebrities feel that they can say the N-word so freely, and do they ever wonder about they're going to get in trouble?
Well, you know, I don't know if they think they can say it so freely. I think in cases like Jennifer Lopez, like we saw, and in cases like Quentin Tarantino and Django Unchained, they feel like it's a little bit more creative license. And in J-Lo's case, which I thought was really interesting at the time, so many African Americans came to her defense when she said the word in the song. I mean, Ja Rule was the first who wrote the song, but that was a point where she was with Sean Diddy Combs.
Was it because,
and it was kind of like she had
a past. She's Hispanic and not maybe not
maybe,
white.
Maybe, but she kind of had her black card at that point, it seemed like, because she was with Diddy. She was a little more hip hop. She was. So it seemed to be okay, which I never really understood.
So why Michael Richards? Why is Michael Richards cascaded? I haven't seen him do anything in a long time. I'm sure he's probably doing okay. And then others like J-Lo and Quentin seem to get a pass.
Because it was hate speech.
Yeah.
Like when Michael Richards said it was hate speech, I think, you know, I want to stand up for hip-hop if I can. As a kid who grew up with hip-hop in New York, I got to stand up for hip-hop. And I think the use of the word in hip-hop, I think, is powerful. I think language is powerful. I'm going to disagree with my elders here for a little bit. But I think language is powerful. I think the ownership of language is powerful. I think taking it back, you know, watching Kanye West, you know, use the N-word in that song. It's a song called Jesus Walks.
Mm-hmm.
It's about Jesus. And he's using a word.
So what does Jesus have to do with the N-word?
He's using the word as a term of endearment. But a song that's a powerful, uplifting record. This is not records that are hateful speaks like Michael Richards used it or like Paula Deen.
Yeah.
Let me just say, state one thing. When you take the history of Afro-American music, what we ended up doing when we got to hip-hop and the way we used our language and disrespected women, disrespected ourselves, is an international embarrassment.
Say that.
And if you're not from America and you don't know this dialogue, when you go to Japan, Italy, France, all these places where I see people, and they turn these things on and say, what happened to you people?
Mm-hmm.
It is an embarrassment, and we should not, you know, as many uses of the word, but the majority of those recordings are not using it in any type of proper way. It's shameful.
Come here.
We're going to agree. This is
come here.
Like,
come here.
That's it. Wynton Marsalis kicked it, Captain. There's no more. He can't be deconstructed. The cat from Global Grind, which is Russell Simmons' outfit, he's trying to stick up for hip-hop. The jazz standard, the jazz, and I love the Marsalises, the Marsalis family, and I love what they represent. They're sharp New Orleanians, if that's a word. He kicked it. There's no more. There's nothing coming. It's a public, it's an international public embarrassment. That's it. I couldn't say it any better. That's it. Captain, what are your thoughts? We got 30-something seconds, man. We got to get out of here.
Not enough time to add anything, so I'll just leave it at that. We'll do it again at Wednesday at 7 p.m.
All right, this is Third Eye Girl. It's a kind of a racy title, Menstrual Cycle, but it is instrumental, not vulgar. Prince, but it's an instrumental. We'll be back Wednesday, folks. It's been real. Thank you.
Thank you.